Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 493, another conversation with Daniel Hopsicker about electoral fraud. This is being recorded on January 2nd of the year 2005. It is my pleasure and privilege to welcome back once again to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker. Daniel, welcome back to our airwaves.
Thank you, Dave. Pleasure to be with you.
Now, in Side 1, you were informing us of something that has yet to appear in print on your website, and this is yet another example of how the same names and the same people keep coming back over and over in so many of these covert action-related scandals. And once you become familiar with the cast of characters, you can begin to get a pretty good idea about what sorts of productions the repertory company is going to be presenting.
Yeah, And it is exactly that. I used to be astounded that I would find out that this guy knew that guy, and then somebody told me one time it's not that big a world up there. Pretty much everybody knows everybody else. Yep. That this was in conjunction with Barry Seal.
Yeah, Barry Seal, by the way, a now-deceased CIA agent, mob person, major drug smuggler connected with the Iran-Contra scandal, possibly involved in the JFK assassination, and the major focal point of Daniel's first book, Barry and the Boys. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah, and if Barry Seal hadn't died, neither one of us would have ever heard of Wally Hilliard.
Yeah, because the operation that he left behind, Barry Seal, that is, appears to have been picked up by other characters, including, among others, Wally Hilliard.
Exactly. And what I'm saying is that it appears that Wally Hilliard performs the same sort of ringmaster of ceremonies job that Seal did for 20 years in the Southeast U.S. Anyway, so we're talking about how you fix an American election. And we've now agreed that it's not just one thing you do. We're looking at a massive covert operation. So we're asking ourselves, how could something be both massive and secret? And we began to talk about the ownership, the curious and suspicious ownership of election companies. So I'm going to put forward to you the big picture here, which is that there are two major ways that the 2004 election was fixed. And the first way was through a 40-year-long campaign to buy up the companies to count the votes. Now, you know, and this began in 1964, by the way, when the predecessor to ES&S was founded by a man named Howard Esping, who I have on reliable authority as being someone who was lifelong associated with the National Security Agency.
Okay.
So if you're going to kill a president in 63, you're going to get in a meeting 5 days later and go, we don't want any of that again. Does anybody have any suggestions? And somebody's going to raise his hand in the back row. Well, why don't we just buy the companies that count the vote and fix the elections?
And this in the wake of the JFK assassination?
Absolutely.
And now, what was the name of this person again?
Howard Esping, the Dallas, Texas-based founder of what is today the company that counts two or three American votes, ES&S.
Right.
Election
okay.
Service Systems. The founder of that company is named Howard Esping.
How is the last name spelled?
Esping.
Okay.
So now we want to get back to just to wrap up with Adnan Khashoggi. So Khashoggi suspected. Khashoggi is one of these Saudi billionaires who owned. I don't know for how many years he owned it. They owned it, but American votes were counted by companies owned by Saudis, and then they flipped it to Accenture. And we come full circle here. When we discover that company, that Saudi-based company, was part of the, in quotes, democratic push into Eastern Europe.
Now,
they went over there selling the government of Estonia on free American-style elections.
Okay, now what was the name of that company you mentioned, Accenture or something like that?
Accenture owns it today. The subsidiary, the election subsidiary, is called election.com.
Okay, and what, Accenture is spelled how? Because I haven't heard these names before.
Accenture.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you.
Now, if I get one of these spellings wrong, I don't want to hear about it later. I was good in spelling.
Oh, yeah. No, it's just that, you know, this stuff is new to me, and I'll guarantee you, as I'm sitting here trying to, etch this into my own mnemonic capacity here, listeners are having similar, are facing a similar challenge. So we'll try to chronicle this as best we can for them. Go ahead, Daniel. This, by the way, is fascinating, and I assume we're going to see this in print on madcowprod.com
tomorrow
at some point.
You will you will see the new video on the Madcap Morning News Show, which we're trying to air as close to weekly as possible. It's a gargantuan task. And two new stories, one both of which are profiled on the show. There's this one, and then there's a really interesting story about Yeslam Bin Laden, who may, before we're done, you know, have something to do with the American elections too. But
fascinating, because you know he's the guy who presides over SECO, the European-based holding company that manages the fabulously wealthy Bin Laden family's European investments. And his name crops up in connection with September 11th in a number of interesting contexts. And I've been just tearing my hair out trying to get people to pay attention to that, to little avail. So I'll be fascinated to hear about that. But now, okay, we've got Saudis. We've got a concatenation involving...
So the story comes full circle
right
here, okay? The Saudi-owned company that counted American votes was also part of the U.S. push towards the democratization of Eastern Europe.
Right.
It's there in Estonia, and... After this recent Ukrainian election, I discovered for the first time that one of the principals in the 2000 Florida vote snafu, former CIA agent Charlie Kane, was also part of the same U.S. Democracy for East Europe deal. He went over to the Ukraine on a U.S. government-sponsored deal to teach Ukrainians about American democratic process. This is the man who was let into the Martin County, Florida election rolls unsupervised, along with his buddy, the local GOP head, where they were supposedly doing something on absentee ballots. But, you know, in light of what happened in 2004 and our increasing sophistication about this, I have no doubt but that he was tinkering with something he shouldn't have been in there.
Now, reviewing again for listeners, this gentleman's name is Charles Kane, K-A-N-E. Worked for the CIA. You wrote in one of your pieces back in the USSR, Daniel, that he had been involved in disseminating information vis-a-vis the investigation of the assassination of President Kennedy. Can you fill us in on that? Because that's a baseline information element for this program.
You know what? Why don't you do that? Because for the moment it escapes me. I mean, Kane was director of security for the CIA.
What you wrote was that he had apparently communicated to somebody about where E. Howard Hunt, the Watergate burglar and former CIA agent, was on November 22nd, 1963.
That's right. I believe I did discover it. The same time I found out that he was over in the Ukraine advising the Ukrainians on setting up democratic elections.
And this in 1996, we've got Charles Kane, basically, after the petals have been removed from the flower of American democracy, they're being showered on Eastern Europe, and so they can be similarly garlanded. And Charles Kane is helping the Ukraine in 1996. 2000, he's in Florida. He's in Martin County, Florida. He's chairman of the Bush-Cheney campaign in Martin County, Florida, working with a guy named Thomas Houck, in order to basically get absentee ballots that had been improperly filled out and had as a result been disqualified back into the game, so to speak. And you noted that in Martin County went for Bush 56-44%. The absentee ballots with which Charles Kane and Thomas Houck were tampering were 2-1 for George Bush, which certainly raises some interesting questions.
Well, exactly. I mean, the whole thing raises interesting questions.
Quite a few, but again, this as an overview, what we're seeing is some of the same cast of characters and some of the same institutions that have been involved in, shall we say, questionable American electoral situations also involved now over in Eastern Europe. You mentioned Estonia. We've touched on the Ukraine.
And in the Ukraine, the exit polls, upon which the first election was ruled invalid, were conducted by Democrat pollster Dick Morris and Republican pollster Frank Luntz, who had been hired by Ukrainian TV. So you realize how completely matters had been figured out beforehand. The reason the Ukrainian election was fixed was because the exit polls did not mirror the final result. That reasoning apparently doesn't hold true in the U.S., where the exit polls did not mirror the final result. But even more interestingly, the exit polls that were done in Ukraine were done by what I would have to tell you are you know, a suspect American pollsters.
We should also note that the State Department pumped millions of dollars into the Ukrainian election prior to this, too. One thing I want to note in passing, we did mention this in a previous interview, the Washington Post and the New York Times, among other newspapers, have inveighed in a most haughty and self-righteous fashion about the shocking results of the Ukrainian election, how the fact that the exit polls did not match the results, that means it's fraudulent. When people in this country have raised exactly the same question, as you've noted, about the American election, because the same thing was true here, those same media voices have labeled them as conspiracy theorists, you know, the standard appellation, and discounted what they had to say. So the Department of Hypocrisy is very much established in the American media. So, Charles Kane, we've talked about Martin County. We're seeing some of the same elements that have been tampering with the elections in this country, also showering democracy on the newly liberated peoples of Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. One of the things you write about, Daniel, in your series, ongoing series on madcowprod.com about election fraud, and that is that two of the states that were battleground states, so to speak, in the 2004 election, Ohio and Florida, both had some very, very questionable, quote, terror alerts, unquote. Warren County, Ohio, and also in Tallahassee. Fill us in on those terror alerts in Ohio and in Tallahassee, and what may have happened, what you surmise may have happened when those, quote, terror alerts took place.
Well, let's just look at the reality of the situation. Florida is not one of the larger states geographically, but it's relatively large. And there was a terror alert in only one city, and in that one city there was a terror alert in only one building. And in that one building, the central tabulating computer that counts all of the votes in Florida resides. And that terror alert happened on the day, on the morning before the election. So less than 24 hours before the 2004 presidential election, there was a terror alert in Florida that caused Homeland Security to secure the building, meaning no one but Homeland Security personnel were allowed in the building for a period of 6 to 12 hours in only one location. And strangely enough, that same location houses the central tabulating computer that counts Florida's votes. Now, is that not a wacky coincidence?
Oh, it sure is one heck of a coincidence. You see a lot of coincidences, and you know, time permitting, Daniel, at the very end, I want you to go back and sort of just quickly outline for us again the Hilliard-Adnan-Khashoggi concatenation that we talked about earlier, because that one, I'm still, my mind is blown over that, frankly. I hadn't, obviously, I had not heard of that until airtime here. So at the very end, just in a couple of minutes before the very end of the side, I want you to review that for us. But now, one of the things that you, again, we had a terror alert in Warren County, where supposedly terrorists were about to strike at Warren County, Ohio. You mentioned about a terror alert in Tallahassee that didn't turn out to be that much of a terrifying thing. Tell us about that.
Well, that's what we've been talking about. I mean, the terror alert in Tallahassee occurred in the building that houses Florida's central tabulating computer that counts the Florida vote.
Yeah, but it turned out
there were only two offices in the building, two state offices, the state election committee and the state archives.
Right.
And apparently, there was concern that there were terrorists situated in the room in the state archive that houses the state's collection of quilts.
Yeah, one of the things you write is that supposedly there was a ticking time bomb, that there was some explosive device. Turned out it was a bunch of papers being blown by an air conditioner vent. And
correct.
So you would... Yeah, go ahead.
In the room where the state kept their collection of quilts.
The point being that these buildings were evacuated and person or persons unknown then had access to them. All this over...
I mean, if I haven't made that point explicitly, I should.
Sure.
I believe that terror alert was called for no other reason than to insinuate personnel, which inserted code into the central tabulating computer that counted the votes in the state of Florida.
And we had a similar situation, and at least we had a terror alert in Warren County, Ohio, in which everything was evacuated so the authorities could get in there. And it turns out in Tallahassee, some papers were being blown by an air conditioning vent and making noise. And this occasioned, a code red or something, terror alert. And so consequently, the electoral facility had to be evacuated, and person or persons unknown then had access to that.
Well, and this sort of, this describes your basic view of the world here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Either you believe it is a coincidence that the only terror alert we know of, except for Ohio, occurred in the building that housed the central tabulating computer for the state of Florida. You do not. And if you believe that those two events were linked, then you are a conspiracy theorist.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if you do not, you're a good citizen.
Or an idiot, depending on what on one's viewpoint.
Or what someone has called a coincidentist.
Right.
Because it's just utterly bizarre. It is utterly bizarre. I mean, that simple fact alone would have been in 48-point type across the top of the Washington Post if the Washington Post was a free newspaper the day after the election.
Right. Well, of course, we know that things aren't necessarily as they should be. We've been talking about some of the companies that have been involved with the vote tabulating technology in the United States. In an earlier broadcast not involving you, Daniel, we talked about the evolution of the ES&S company and Diebold, the Yurosevich brothers, their strong connections to Paul Weyrich's National Leadership Council, and in turn to some of the covert action crowd from the Iran-Contra affair. We've looked at the incestuous nature of Diebold and ES&S. And then in your series, you have expanded and closed that connection still further by pointing out the incestuous relationship of Sequoia and ES&S. And also, and I'll briefly sum up some of these connections, because Daniel has written a four-part series to date on the election fraud and some of these conspiracies. And obviously, as you've heard so far, more information is forthcoming. Some of the high points, or maybe low points, that Daniel has mentioned, one of the people involved was Sequoia. One of the top election tabulating machines was Salvatore Reale, a Gambino underboss. You mention a history of the development of Sequoia. It began with the American Voting Machine, a Rockwell International spinoff. Lloyd Dixon Jr., one of the early officials with that company, was indicted for bribing Buffalo election officials. Then you mentioned that Lewis Wolfson, another ES&S guy, was bribing former Supreme Court Justice Abe Fortas. And one thing that we touched on but didn't get a chance to really go into in some detail, that is the fascinating state of affairs down in Nolens and Jerry Fowler and Pasquale Rocco Risi. Tell us about what took place there and how Jerry Fowler's bad luck at... I should also mention that ES&S predecessor, ES&S also got into some hot water. A guy named Ransom Shoup was looking at a possible indictment, but Reagan's election in 1980 got him out of that. But you mentioned a fascinating state of affairs down in New Orleans, which in turn feeds into some of the goings-on in Florida in 2002.
It was a training ground for me, and I think it's what happened, what I learned had happened in New Orleans, I believe is going to help me break through to the truth of what happened in 2004.
Tell us what was going on in the Big Easy.
Because in 2000, after the 2000 election, as I began to probe the ownership of the company, the first thing I discovered was that the Southeast Regional Manager had just been convicted of paying bribes to the Commissioner of Elections, the state of Louisiana, for over a decade. Okay, and the way the news came out, the way the news became public, the reason it became public, was that the corruption, the election corruption, had just grown too egregious to hide during a 1996 state election on a gambling initiative to allow Harrah's Casino to open a casino in New Orleans.
And Harrah's was the casino in Las Vegas at which former NFL football player Jerry Fowler had run up massive gambling debts, which appears to have basically made him vulnerable for bribery.
Yeah, I say, probably unkindly, I say in the last video I did, that after that, Fowler paid off like a jimmied slot machine for over a decade.
I guess you could say in a football mode that was illegal procedure.
Exactly. So here's the deal. In 2004, along with the presidential election, there was a gambling initiative on the state ballot in Florida. that would have or will allow casino-type slot machines to be placed in South Florida. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that by correlating the demonstrable fraud, when gambling's on the ballot, the velvet gloves come off, okay? I mean, because you know, now you and I, if we want that initiative to pass, have, like, a real financial interest in it.
Oh, by the way, let me mention one thing that you also, before we get back to Florida, before we leave New Orleans, one of the things you mention is that in this tampered election in Florida with regard to the gambling initiative that would open to Harrah's, or in New Orleans would open to Harrah's, the New Orleans election supervisor, Tony Giambaluca, who had the keys to where the election machines were stored, allegedly committed suicide behind a garbage dumpster in New Orleans.
Exactly, which is another incident that makes me think that perhaps Wayne Madsen's story has more than a kernel of truth. You know, it's in real American scandals, unfortunately, you always find dead bodies.
Yeah, one of the things Madsen mentions, and perhaps we can visit with him at some point, and again, that story has been to a certain extent tainted, at least in journalistic sense, by a forged check. But that may be, you know, that may be a rove job, so to speak. But one of the people that was involved in Madsen's investigation also turned up an alleged suicide as well. And I would hearken for listeners back to, for the record, 468 and 470, there was a very heroic gentleman down in Texas named Ethan Gibbs, an accountant who had developed a foolproof system for providing a paper trail feedback for all electronic voting machines. It was called the TrueVote system. But in March of this year, or perhaps February, he was killed in a suspicious auto accident down in Texas. So when you say the gloves come off, they do indeed come off. Now let's get back to Florida. Go ahead.
Right. So suspecting that I would find electoral fraud that influenced the fraud in the presidential vote, I looked into the gambling initiative vote and discovered that it does. Discovered that it correlated almost exactly in one case with what UC Berkeley researchers said was unexplained electronic voting for Bush in Broward County. In Broward County, the gambling initiative was defeated, and yet the gambling initiative was reported by the county commissioner of elections to the state of Florida as having passed. I think there was like 100-some thousand vote difference between what was reported and what actually happened. And when that was brought to the attention of state election officials, it was explained away in using an explanation that you will find in three or four other places in the 2004 election. Always when an alert citizen sees something that he knows is wrong, okay? Never do they come forward and say, well, in this particular precinct here, something bad happened, and you know, no, it's only when a citizen comes forward, and then they use this explanation. They say, well, the precinct computer can only count up to 32,658. I don't know if the exact number is 32,000 something, and then it begins counting backward. So in other words, if there are 64,000 votes for John Kerry in this precinct, John Kerry ends up with nothing because he goes up to 32,000 and then he goes right back down again. That's what happened in Broward County on the gambling initiative, and that is, I believe, one of the ways they stole the election.
You mentioned we're down to our last 5 minutes or so on this side. I want to refer listeners to the madcowprod.com website and the articles there. One of the things that I want to note is that this is not an easy filigree or concatenation to sort of to lay out. Indeed, it's not supposed to be. This is a conspiratorial process, and it's not supposed to be transparent. It's supposed to be opaque to the viewer. But you point out some just fascinating connections, for example, Deborah Clark and her husband, Richard A. Clark, and their relationship to Sequoia, their relationship to ES&S, and how so many of these institutions and individuals in various states wind up hooking up with one another and with all sorts of indictments and or crimes and funny votes. One of the things that you mentioned, I just want to relate this for listeners, in Hillsborough County, in Florida. That was one of the counties that was using the Sequoia machines. You relate an August 31st, 2002 primary. That was fascinating. Do you have the figures in front of you there? Because otherwise I can just quickly pinch hit. That was one of the funniest things, to give you an idea of just how weird this stuff can be. Hillsborough, you mentioned that the state attorney in the August 31st, 2002 primary, one town had 12,498 voters, and not one of those voters cast a vote for state attorney. But in Hillsborough County as a whole, in that primary election, 118,699 people voted, but there were 125,891 votes registered for the state attorney, 7,192 more votes than voters voted, despite the fact that one town of almost 13,000 people, not one person voted for state attorney. And, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to figure out that something is very much rotten in Denmark.
Well, sure. Have you ever known of anybody to get a little over-enthusiastic attempting to impress the boss?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one or two.
That would appear to be what happened there.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things too, I would encourage listeners, or perhaps Daniel, if you've got the time from your remarkable investigations, I think a visual chart that would help to lay out some of these connections would help people to penetrate some of this. Daniel, we've only got a few minutes left here in the end. We'll have to take this up again. Actually, we've got about 1 minute left. I am salivating here at the information you presented at the beginning. So we've got an investigative lead that would tie Wally Hilliard in with Adnan Khashoggi and with Election.com and with some of the capricious technology, shall we say, that is leading to suspicious voting results in the United States.
And Khashoggi is tied into the gambling initiative that was passed in Florida. I don't think I told you that.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. Oh, interesting. Interesting. Very interesting indeed.
Find out amazing things just by looking around if you're interested, I think.
Yeah, and then, of course, Khashoggi is also somebody who's played a role in helping to finance the 911 BS movement with, you know, the cruise missile hit the Pentagon, explosive pods under the jets, controlled demolition of the World Trade Center. You know, it was to choose who did it, yeah?
Anybody that ever sold a bumper sticker that said Bush knew is full of it.
Yeah, well, I don't think Bush knew.
Because while Bush may have known, selling a bumper sticker says Bush knew without having proof does nothing but discredit anyone that comes along with real information.
Well, there is an awful lot of good and real information, and you've downloaded for us and investigated for us no shortage of that. Daniel, very quickly, because we're running low on time here, give us your website where people can access your articles, your videos, and so forth.
It's madcowprod.com. I appreciate everyone's support. We're going to be doing a book this year called Rogue State, the covert op that ate America. And we subsidize that through sales of the books I've already done and the documentaries on the site.
And again, I heartily endorse Welcome to Terrorland, one of the best and most important books about September 11th. Also, listeners should remember the Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com. Descriptions, links, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile for download, and links to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM that have all of the For the Record programs available on real audio, including my interviews with Daniel Hopsicker. Daniel, thanks for visiting with us once again, and we're going to wrap things up now. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 493, another conversation with Daniel Hopsicker about electoral fraud. This is being recorded on January 2nd of the year 2005. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.